Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. Our guest today is Sarah Gabriel Barron, and she is a candidate for Parliament in the Durham region. And I'm going to tell you right off the top, you can go to sarahfordurham.com, and that's a number four, Sarah with an H, for Durham.com. And Sarah is also on Twitter. And Sarah, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me, Phil. I really appreciate it.
Let's ask about what motivated you to, why was it necessary to run a campaign of the type you were running? What is it about the other parties that caused you to think you had to come forward?
I've been part of an email listserv for about a year now, with people like Brennan Lloyd, Dr. Gordon Edwards, Dr. Susan O'Donnell, Doreen Dewar, who have all been very active. They've all been very active with the No Nuclear campaign for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to learn more, so I started a podcast called Radioactive, in all caps. It's on Spotify and Google Podcasts. So I started my podcast Radioactive about 10 months ago, just trying to make the no nuclear conversation more personable and more digestible. So I started out by interviewing locals who are living in communities with radioactive waste issues. So I have one about Port Hope, I have one about Peterborough, I have one about Chalk River, I have one about Pinawa, Manitoba, and it was the one about Peterborough that with Peter Harris with Citizens Against Radioactive Neighborhoods that got me the most galvanized to get more politically active. So in Peterborough, the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission in 2020 gave BWXT a 10-year license without a business plan. And BWXT, if you just Google BWXT, you'll see that they're the United States' largest nuclear weapons producer. And so they have a blind license to do whatever they want in the very middle of a small Canadian neighborhood. There are houses all around that plant. I actually went and visited it on the campaign trail. So I started being quite concerned, like these other people on this email listserv, that the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission might be compromised in terms of having citizens' best interest at heart. And I got more and more concerned the more I learned. Every day was a more revealing email, another oh my God moment, right? And then the writ was dropped the same day that I learned that the hydrogen equivalent levels at Bruce were about double what they're supposed to be. And what that means is that the cooling tubes or the tubes for the hydrogen fuel rods in the reactors, those CANDU reactors, have a coolant in them. And they call it hydrogen equivalent because the isotopes of deuterium and tritium are also in there. And they cause the tubes to get brittle over time. And 120, it was 100 parts per million, then they changed it to 120. And the finding at Bruce, I think just the day before the writ was dropped, was double that. So all the forecasting that they had done, all the modeling that they had done around how fast these tubes become brittle and could potentially break, was out the window. And that really frightened me, right? Like these are on the Great Lakes, and you can see on my YouTube, if you just Google Sarah, or you just search Sarah Gabriel Barron on YouTube, you'll see that I've made some YouTubes about this issue. One about Point Lepreau, so the Bay of Fundy, what's going on there is very worrisome. We can talk about that in a minute. But this issue of potential, you know, basically Chernobyl level accident on the Great Lakes galvanized me to try to make the message as loud as possible. So I chose Durham because Darlington is here and because it's Erin O'Toole's writing, and I was hoping to get some exposure. And so far I've had this interview. I've had a couple newspaper interviews. Yeah. And Jody Wilson-Raybould's book just came out, and it's kind of precipitous timing. It's good timing. The day before she launched her book was the day I launched my latest YouTube, which is about how SNC-Lavalin has controlled our nation's nuclear agenda since Harper broke up Atomic Energy of Canada Limited, the Crown Corporation. He started breaking it up in 2011.
Yeah, I want to ask
you, a lot of Canadians don't know this.
I mean, that is part of the privatization. I'm really glad you underlined that in your program. That is a worrisome step, because when you say privatization, people understand it. The power of oversight and responsibility of the people and to the people gets lost, right? It becomes harder to keep track of where money is going, who makes the decisions. As I've read your reports, there's a lot of conflict of interest. People who, like Mr. Harper, who now is a member of a board, he's the one who privatized it in 2011. And so, and by the way, that has to have traction amongst voters. Surely when you talk to people, you must be getting a response. The word nuclear makes everybody nervous. Go ahead.
Well, not in Durham, right? Durham is an OPG town, an OPG riding, and that's where Darlington is located. And my issue is not necessarily with Darlington or the OPG. Darlington workers are the gold standard in safety. My issue is with the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission and with that GOCO model, the government-operated, government-owned, company-operated model. When AECL was broken up, right, and SNC-Lavalin took over in 2011, they got their hands on the CANDU designs. They sold it for 15 million. Sorry, they bought the rights to the CANDU designs for 15 million. And the same year, they received 75 million from the Harper government. And that wasn't enough, right? In 2015,
nice return,
they created the Canadian National Energy Alliance. Huh?
I said, a nice return for 11. I put in 11, you give me 75.
Yeah, 15 for 75, right? So then in 2015, SNC-Lavalin created a consortium of sorts called the Canadian National Energy Alliance, with a couple of known weapons manufacturers, and they got control of what was left of the Crown, control of Canada's nuclear program, basically, which is Canada Nuclear Lab, CNL. And that's where the scientists live. And they cut more than 3,000 jobs in 1 year. They didn't have a president or CEO. They were audited in 2017. And that audit found that they didn't have a president and CEO for that entire time. And they hadn't had, even when it was still a Crown Corporation, they hadn't had public hearings since 2009. So you're right, Phil. Like, there's absolutely no government oversight what SNC-Lavalin is doing. The really important point is that the experimental designs that were being developed, the experimental materials that are in existence at Pinawa and Chalk River, are no longer under the exclusive control of the Crown. They're under the control of SNC-Lavalin, which is known to have some pretty serious issues around the world. The World Trade Organization said that they're not allowed to bid on any design on any World Trade Organization jobs for 10 years because of corruption over something that happened in Bangladesh. So we've got corruption in Libya, we've got corruption in Bangladesh, we've got corruption in Canada with this whole deferred preferential agreement that Jody Wilson-Raybould did not want to go with. She wanted to actually investigate them for corruption in Libya. We know how that went.
There's a happy story. Libya, nobody even knows now who's running the place.
But the real question is, like, so SNC-Lavalin was bribing government Libyan officials for 10 years, right? From 2001 to 2011.
The cost.
And I guess that's... that story didn't really break until just before the last election. And Jody Wilson-Raybould said, no, I'm actually going to investigate them instead of doing this get out of jail free card, which is a deferred preferential agreement, which is basically just a little fine. And the problem is that if they had gone the criminal route with SNC-Lavalin, they wouldn't have been able to bid on any government contracts for 10 years. But at this point, SNC-Lavalin controls Canada's nuclear program. So for them to not be able to bid on any government bids for 10 years means that all of that would have come to a standstill. And the question is, what are they doing? What is the plan? Nowhere anywhere online can a public citizen find out what does it mean about incentivizing, about making money. What are they selling? Are they selling experimental designs? Are they selling plutonium? Are they selling waste that has highly enriched uranium from which we can make bombs? Like, nobody knows what they're doing. It's not being tracked.
Are you surprised that the major parties are not talking about this?
Are you?
Okay. But I'm not specific.
I'm surprised the Canadians aren't talking about it. I'm surprised the Canadians aren't talking about it. I'm surprised that the news isn't talking about it. I'm surprised that it, I think the Canadians just assume that our nuclear designs and our nuclear materials are under the protection of the Crown when it hasn't been the case. For more than a decade, for about a decade now.
Yeah. And we're speaking to Sarah Gabriel Barron, and go to sarahfordurham.com and also Twitter to follow Sarah and the campaign. I'm really glad you're running. I'm concerned, we raise it on the program here a lot, is that we saw these debates and Canada's involved in a very dangerous military alliance. We don't seem to be able to withdraw from it. Nobody even asks about it. The North Atlantic Treaty Organization, do you have opinions about that?
I do. My concern is that we're locked into NATO and that NATO is changing. It's not the organization that it was at the end of World War II. They're expanding Article 5 to include attacks by satellite and cyber attacks. So what does that mean in today's world? It still locks us into requiring that we increase our NATO payments to 2% of GDP. So we're talking over 50 billion, like 60. And for a small country like Canada, we're small population wise, it just seems like the mandate of NATO is unnecessary at this point. We're living in one world, and the United Nations really should be all that we need in terms of being part of a peacekeeping organization. But Canadian lives are far more at risk from climate crisis events than we are from overseas conflict. Yeah. And really, if we're going to protect Canadian lives, at least some, preferably a large part of our military should be retraining to be prepared for the climate emergencies that are going to continue happening with deeper effect and greater frequency in the country. I am very concerned about NATO, but most importantly, I'm concerned about, you know, the whole military industrial complex and what is really going on with nukes, right? So can I tell, do I have time to tell you a little bit about Point Lepreau?
Well, we can post it. I'm sorry, did you say play it?
Do we have a little bit of time? I'd like to tell you about what's going on at Point Lepreau in New Brunswick on the Bay of Fundy.
I misunderstood you. Yes, you want to tell me what's going on? Yes, please.
Okay, so we have a problem with nuclear waste in Canada. The CANDU reactors have created a lot of solid waste, and no country on earth has created a long plan for the disposal or management. There's a big controversy on whether we should just be putting them in dumps deep underground or whether we should be creating management facilities for the millions of years required to take care of this nuclear waste. So the companies that have been tasked with dealing with this nuclear waste is SNC-Lavalin, which contracts out Canadian Nuclear Labs. And so of course they want to monetize it. So some of these new small modular reactor designs will tell you that they're recycling used CANDU fuel. And that's a big lie. What they really do is they liquefy it, and the idea is to extract a very small percentage of plutonium. And plutonium is what makes nuclear bombs. So the Moltex design that has already been approved for the Bay of Fundy, where the Point Lepreau location is right now, that's under New Brunswick Power, has already received $50.5 million. And 9 non-proliferation experts who have served under 6 U.S. presidents have already written to Justin Trudeau twice this year, begging him to not go ahead with that design. And they will tell you, oh, no, it's going to be really hard to get out the plutonium. That's not the case, is what these proliferation experts are saying, is it's actually quite easy to get their hands on that plutonium. And the whole point to these small modular reactor designs is to make money selling them around the world. So any country really can make a deal with SNC-Lavalin, which is basically Atomic Energy of Canada, Canadian Nuclear Labs, they're in control, to buy these small modular nuclear reactors. And in Canada, the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission has said that small modular nuclear reactors are exempt from environmental impact assessment. The plan is to dot them across the north. Those micro reactor designs will probably have something called TRISO fuels in them. And that's what BWXT, remember at the beginning I was telling you about BWXT, which is doing whatever it wants in the middle of Peterborough, Ontario. BWXT, that's the kind of fuel that they use in their nuclear subs. Mm-hmm. Is TRISO fuels. So we have two worries. We have the worry of these molten salt reactors and plutonium extraction. So that's Moltex on the Bay of Fundy. And also you referenced in one of my videos, I talk about Stephen Harper, who started this whole thing in 2011. So he's on the advisory board for Terrestrial Energy in Oakville, and their design is also molten salt reactor.
It's nice to, or not so nice to find out that Stephen is still in the mix. Everybody thought he had gone away.
Did you ever doubt? Did you ever doubt?
A board of directors, it turns out he's sitting on it.
Advisory board, advisory board. So what they're not telling you is that with this memorandum of agreement, this MOU, memorandum of understanding between the provinces, between the power generators, and between the government of Canada, is it locks them into only talking about new nuclear in a positive way. It's actually part of that memorandum of understanding. So they're not even allowed within their own agreement that they agreed to be critical of what's going on. It's up to citizens like me, like you, like anybody who has the fortitude to actually dig into this really scary topic, to be critical of small modular nuclear reactors. And because they've been dubbed clean and green, any monies that go into clean green portfolios, where the renewables, solar, wind, geothermal efficiencies, those portfolios, instead of those dollars going towards the technology that's available now, it'll go to new nuclear. And it's weapons manufacturers and big oil is all investing in small modular nuclear reactors. It's a con job. It's a giant con job. Yeah.
Well, Sarah, I assume that I gather from the way your approach that you'll be campaigning long after your campaign. I hope people get to know you this way. It's sarahfordurham.com. And it's Sarah Gabriel Barron, and she's on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And Sarah, it's a pleasure talking to you. Good luck. We're going to check with you after the election's over and see what you're going to do next. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Phil. Your show's amazing. Thank you so much for doing it. And thank you for having me on.
Okay. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT.